Whoever you are, wherever you have come from, whomever you love, we welcome you this morning. My name is Dave Clements, and I am the intern minister, and I am joined this morning with Carolyn Schlimmer and also Karen Labracco.
We light this chalice in honor and memory of our ancestors, whether genetic or spiritual or in any other sense. May all the good in their spirits be alive in us today, and may we remember to honor it. Call to worship today is a poem written by a Unitarian minister from Illinois. It's printed in your service. For 5,000 years or more than 15,000 generations, human beings have been invoking spiritual power. My predecessors and yours have gathered together to make sense of their lives and their place in the cosmos. And they've spoken aloud and invited what they conceived as sacred and powerful to be with them. They called on the spirits of air and earth, fire and water. They called the bear and the deer. They asked for the raven to protect them. They pleaded for the heroes of old to slay the monsters of their fears. They sang songs they learned from their grandparents and moved in the appointed ways, or in ways that were new but felt like the right thing to do. And they imputed power to these spirits and to the memories of those heroes. They called them gods, and they were invoked: Vishnu, Kali, Elohim, Odin, and 100 million others. Every group of people everywhere, they gathered to make sense of their lives and to make sense of their place in the cosmos, and they called these spirits to be present to them. And so do we. We gather this morning to make sense of ourselves and this universe in which we live as best we are able. And we call ourselves to worship together, and we invoke the power and wonder of life itself, that to which all those spirits of animals and memories of heroes pointed the way. We invoke that power, which is, we know, always around, always with us, but which we sometimes forget about. We forget that we are part of the whole of creation. We forget that we are stardust. We forget that we are capable of miracles, first among them that we can love. We forget these things. So we invoke the power of existence so that we can remember, so we can lift our eyes and open our ears to the true and beautiful. For 5,000 years or more, we have done this in many tongues, in many ways we have done this. And so we continue that ancient tradition in our way, in our time. And so now, let us worship together.
This is a story that comes to us in various variations from all over the world. Once upon a time, there was a man named Ivan who lived with his elderly father and his daughter. And at this time, so long ago, they lived at a time when old people were thought to be useless. And when someone could not work hard, they were taken to the forest to die alone. And one day, Ivan took his father and tied him up to his daughter's sled to take him to the forest. And the daughter said, "Father, father, where are you going?" "I'm going to the forest with your grandfather." "Well, why?" "Because grandfather, he's not strong enough to cut down trees anymore or collect berries. It's something I must do, daughter. It's something I must do." "Well, can I go with you?" "Yes, as long as you don't ask any more questions." So the little girl went, and she was picking flowers and dancing around and having a good time going deep into the forest. And then when they got to the middle, Ivan said to his father, "I'm very sorry, but you know the way of our people. Goodbye." And the little girl was so upset. She said, "No, no, something, my grandfather will starve or the wolves will eat him. This can't be." "It is the way of our people." The little girl was quiet and silent and thoughtful. She said, "Well, just make sure that we don't leave the sled here. We need to take that back home, because, you know, when you get old, I will need that to take you to the forest." Ivan thought, "You're right, my daughter. We will take grandfather home, but we can't tell the neighbors. This will be our secret." And so they went home, and they hid grandfather in a back room. It was their big secret. And shortly after this, things got really tough in the village. Food became very, very scarce. Everyone was hungry. And the amount of food that Ivan could share with his father grew less and less every day. And the villagers, they used up all their stores and stockpiles of food. There was no more grain left. They even went to the the seeds that they had stored away for the spring planting. And they ate that because they were hungry. There was nothing else. And when they did that, they knew that their fate was sealed. They would not live. There was no food. And Ivan took the last hard little piece of bread to his father and said, "This is all we have, and we are doomed." Grandfather said, "Nonsense. If you go to that barn, take the thatched roof off the barn, thresh it some more, you will get a goodly amount of grain from that." And Ivan did that. He did as his father said. He planted the grain, and there was a great harvest. The people were saved. And the villagers said, "Ivan, where did you get such good advice?" He said, "From my father. He is a very wise person." "But your father is dead." And his daughter said, "Grandfather is not dead. We have been keeping him hidden, but not his wisdom. He has saved us all." And from then on, in that village, old people were honored and revered. So be it.
I'd like you now to join with me in the spirit of prayer. We felt a shadow come over the world this week when we learned of the people killed and wounded in Paris. One more shocked heartbreak in a world that seems to yield brutal violence, murder, and genocide on a regular basis. Trying to honor the worth and dignity of every person is so hard. The hate-filled killers and those who manipulate them, how can we consider their worth and dignity? And the victims who may resemble us or may not, sometimes it's easier to diminish their worth and dignity just a little bit to make the pain more bearable. Martin Luther King said, "Darkness cannot drive out darkness, only light can do that. Hate cannot drive out hate, only love can do that." May our spirits be strong enough to love. May we help each other know all the meanings of standing on the side of love in order to drive out darkness with light, to drive out hate with love. Amen, and may it be so. As a teacher and a child growing up with family members who were both adopted and birthed, I'm somewhat aware of pitfalls involved with family trees. Any large group of students is going to involve some who live in foster care, with relatives, with guardians. So many of you are teachers. You understand we avoid the term parents. I tried to not make a big thing of it by saying, "Please ask your folks to sign this, because your folks are your folks." And it worked in Holmes County. For some people, maybe most people, looking back at family history involves both blessings and tragedies, things to celebrate, and things to reject, even to recover from. I want to acknowledge that seeking the answer to "where do I come from" can be painful. But in retrospect, my own heritage seems bland. Midwestern, lower middle class, WASP, plain vanilla. I got so excited when I studied German and realized my mother's family used words that must be from a German dialect, probably Pennsylvania Dutch. Does anybody else know "being doppy" or "red up"? But then I learned that no, Granny just had neighbors that used those words. It wasn't me. Boring, boring. My Andrew's grandmother on my father's side must have thought her heritage boring too, but she had astounding pretensions to gentility. I remember her ancestors' stories, her family's adventures as some of the first European settlers in Ohio, her father's daring heroism in the Civil War, or an ancestor whose profile is on the Indian head pennies, and many more. But alas, fact-checking revealed that most of her stories were exaggerated or even fiction, or worse than that, often somebody else's published fiction. I grew up envying people with exotic ethnic foods. But then Garrison Keillor made it clear that corn on the cob, fresh tomatoes, and green bean casserole are ethnic foods. They're our ethnic foods. At 20, I was able to visit Granny's first cousins in the north of England. I was thrilled to see her cousins pinch pie dough the same kind of weird way that I learned how to do. I was also excited when my aunt did one of those DNA test things and found out that 2.7% of her genes, and probably mine, came from Neanderthals. Then I found out most Europeans and Asians have between 1% and 4% Neanderthal genes. Again, I'm not special. For a while, I felt a bit self-righteous because it's unlikely that my American ancestors owned slaves. That was punctured when I realized that my New England ancestors were probably involved in the slave trade. So what really affects who we are? Nature or nurture? Heredity or environment? What I think is the truth or the actual truth, whatever that is? Modern research has an answer. It's complicated. My twin cousins' genes, ones who were adopted, they don't include the BRCA breast cancer gene, and they do give them slender waists. But they and my three sisters all use Doppy and Red Up even today. We like the same music. We pinch pie crust the same way. We even share some similar gestures and expressions. And what does it matter? We are connected to our ancestors by more than just genes. You may or may not be genetically related to the person whose language and dialect are yours, or the people you associate with your favorite comfort food, your sense of style, the person who taught you to love playing the trumpet, or to use a fishing hook or a wrench, or not to touch a 220 wire. Look around our church. Hal learned music from his parents and others. For how many people is Hal an ancestor? Last spring, our graduating seniors acknowledged their OWL leaders as teachers who have been crucial to their lives. They are certainly ancestors. Whether the connection is genetic or not, whether we embrace or fight to reject what has come down to us, we are shaped by our forebears and what their lives have taught us. And I found a wonderful quote from Ralph Ellison. Some people are your relatives, but others are your ancestors. And you get to choose the one you want to have as ancestors, and you create yourself out of those values.
We are because they were. When I first was assigned this topic, I go, well, what? But the more we looked into it, I thought the easiest way to kind of connect us with the past is actually to take a journey. So this morning we're going to take a journey. And to begin with, I want you to begin to think about the year 2005. 10 years ago. Anyone know what gas prices were 10 years ago? A little over a dollar. Actually, $1.10. But here, in this congregation, 10 years ago, in September, you hired Reverend Melissa. And those of you who are here today, I'm sure many of you might have been there and remember that. But you remember these past 10 years and those experiences. And so that's a starting point as we go down this journey. Over not quite 50 years ago, the year was 1960. And in 1960, a wonderful event happened. The Unitarian Universalist Association was created. The merging of the Universalists and the Unitarians officially took place in 1961, but the association was first created to make that happen. But now I want to take a step back on this journey, not one century or two or even three or four or five, but 6 centuries. The year is 1568. And I am Francis David. And my name, Francis David, I have been asked by the king to debate. And the debate is on the unity of God. I will be representing the Unitarian position and debating with the Trinitarians. I already know the outcome of that debate. It will last approximately 10 days. And at the end of that, I will be granted the winner. The king will convert to Unitarianism and issue what is known as the Edict of Torda, which was to grant religious freedom to the Christians in Europe. And I will continue to preach the liberal thinking, which will find me put into jail for my beliefs, of which I will spend the rest of my life and die in November 1579. But the birth of Unitarianism will go on and continue on. And now come with me many years later, as we go back to our time traveler cart. And the year is 1926. Olympia Brown. Olympia, good to see you. Glad you could join us here today. She dedicated her life to opening the doors for women. Didn't you?
I did.
She got behind the women's suffrage movement, but actually more important than that, she was the first woman to graduate from a theological school, St. Lawrence University, Theological University. And she was the first ordained woman as a Unitarian Universalist minister. And she preached, and what she preached about was women's rights. One of her good friends, you remember Gwendolyn Brown Willis, don't you? She said, her ministry was the first objective of her life, since in her youthful enthusiasm, she believed that freedom of religious thought in a liberal church would supply the groundwork for all other freedoms. She promoted a broad range of reforms aimed at women, believing that education was the key to women's advancement. She worked tirelessly to have women admitted to colleges and professional schools. So thank you, Olivia, for being with us today. And what would be a stop on our journey to tell you about someone that you've never even heard of? And I didn't actually hear of until I looked at my own history. My name is Coleman Lyman, and the year is 1872. And as I look back upon my history and what I leave, in a book, I write the following. Long after we of the present shall have passed through life to our silent graves, some few may rise up to bless the hearts and hands of which the work of the genealogist is composed. The future historian may gather some shreds for the web he may be weaving, and the historical painter may catch some lingering lineaments on the canvas of other days. Whatever may be the result, the conscious remains of having labored long and faithful to perpetuate the memory of the worthy ancestry of a great, far-spreading family in New England that believed in religious liberty. This work is committed to the attention of all of this family who would learn something of their ancestral history and cherish the memory of their honored ancestors. So these three examples have left something to us as future generations. But that leads me to the question to all of you? What is our responsibility to those who have gone before? And I believe first, we have a responsibility to carry them with us, to be their voices, to give credit to the life that they lived. You know, such was the case of a gentleman named Ethelred Brown. And Ethelred Brown grew up in Jamaica. And as a young man, he attended the local church. And while he was there, it was an Easter Sunday, and the people were saying their usual words out loud. And this is what he heard. The unity in Trinity, and the Trinity in unity, is to be worshipped. And he thought, what? He liked math, and he knew how to add, and he knew that three wasn't the same as one. How could you have a unity in a Trinity, or a Trinity in the unity? How can these three things be one thing? How can one thing be three? It didn't make sense to him. So right then and there, while sitting in church, he decided to chart his own course. And chart his own course he did. He left the church, went to his uncle's home, and there he found a tract called "The Lord Our God is One God." And he thought, yeah, that makes sense. And that tract was written by Reverend William Ellery Channing, who was a Unitarian minister in the United States. And after reading that in other books, Eldred decided, I want to become a Unitarian. But there were no Unitarians in Jamaica. But that didn't stop him. And a few years later, he decided that he wanted to become a Unitarian minister. And so in his own small way, as a young teenager, wrote a letter to the Unitarian Church in New York. And surprisingly, he got an answer. And he was told that he would have to come to the United States to study to become a Unitarian minister. And so at the age of 18, he set off for the United States and studied. And in 1912, was ordained a Unitarian minister. He went back to Jamaica, married, raised a family, and there in Jamaica for the next 8 years, started a Unitarian church, which still is in existence today. After 8 years, he left and went to the United States and settled in New York. And there, he set up a church in New York where he served as minister for 35 years. Second, what can we do? I believe we need to learn to cherish and to remember what our ancestors stood for. And the year was 1973. And in 1973, a particular gentleman, well, hi, Harvey. Good to see you today. Mr. Harvey Milk. Now, Mr. Harvey Milk in 1973 ran for a position in the San Francisco Board of Supervisors, which you lost, right, Harvey?
I did.
Okay. And that didn't stop you, did it?
No.
But what he learned was that if he's going to win, he's got to build coalitions, collaboration. And so he started working with the firefighters and the Teamsters and other organizations within the city. And you ran again. And what happened that time? He lost again. But the mayor appointed him to a board of appeals. And in the third time in 1977, he ran to the board of supervisors and won and became the first openly gay man in the United States to be elected to a public office. And once he is in office, he began to promote the rights and privileges and opportunities for not only gay people, but for all minorities. And in 1978, at a speech commemorating the anniversary of the Stonewall riots, you said, I ask my brothers and sisters to make a commitment to fight for themselves, for the freedom, for their country. We will not win our rights by staying quietly in our closets. We are coming out to fight the lies, the myths, and the distortions. We are coming out to tell the truth about gays, for I am tired of the conspiracy of silence. So I'm going to talk about it. You must come out. Come out to your parents, your relatives. You've got to keep electing gay people to know there is better hope for tomorrow, not only for gays, but for blacks, Asians, the disabled, our senior citizens, and us. Without hope, we give up. I know you cannot live on hope alone, but without it, life is not worth living. You and you and you have got to see the promise of hope does not fade. Is that right, Harvey?
Yes.
And so Harvey went on, and shortly thereafter gave his life. He was killed by Dan White, who not only killed him, but also Mayor Moscone. But the thing that his legacy teaches us about is this whole thing of hope and never giving up hope. So, in our journey today, we've had an opportunity to look at the past of several individuals that we might not be related to, but their life and their legacy left something for us. We are because they were. These individuals are still with us. In many cases, their struggles have become our struggles. We share a history with their lives. And my challenge to each of you this day is to learn about and embrace the stories of those who have gone before. Draw strength from their lives. In closing, I leave the words with you of Reverend Mark Bellantini, a Unitarian minister formerly in Columbus, Ohio. Let my body remember, let my hands and feet remember, let my breath remember those who have come before me. Didn't Muhammad wait quietly in his cave? And didn't Jesus sigh silently by the blue lake? And Guanyin, didn't she sit in silence, thinking about what to do before doing it? And what was Siddhartha, the Buddha, doing anyway under the tree, if not just sitting quietly? And Susan B. Anthony, didn't she push back from her desk and take a breath now and then? And Florence Nightingale, didn't she put down her nurse's hat and think silently about what to write in her essay on mysticism before she actually wrote it? And Sophie Foss, didn't she stop telling stories sometimes and just sit there? And didn't Black Elk just notice the sunlight glancing off his chair sometimes? And Starhawk, does she only talk and write, or does she too keep silence? Let us remember them all with our bodies. Let us remember them with the silence they too knew. May it be so.
Our closing words today come from a book called Dwellings, A Spiritual History of the Living World by Linda Hogan. Suddenly, all our ancestors appear behind us. Be still, they say. Watch and listen. For you are the result of the love of thousands.
They are with us still. In the struggles we choose for ourselves, in the ways we move forward in our lives, in bringing our world forward with us. It is right to remember the names of those who gave us strength in this choice of living. It is right to name the power of hard lives well lived. We share a history with those lives. We belong to the same motion. They too were strengthened by what had gone before. They too were drawn on by the vision of what might come to be. Those who lived before us, who struggled for justice and suffered injustice, before us have not melted into the dust and have not disappeared. They are with us still. The lives they lived hold us steady. Their words remind us and call us back to ourselves. Their courage and love evoke our own. We, the living, Carry them with us. We are their voices, their hands, their hearts. We take them with us, and with them choose the deeper path of living. Amen.